And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, Unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord, who appeared unto him. The promise is repeated in chapter 13. Look at verses 15 and 16. For all the land which thou seest to thee will I give it unto thy seed forever, and I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth. Chapter 15, verses 1 through 6. We're not going to read these verses, but there, Abraham has not yet had a child. He's an old man. His wife is an old woman. There's no child yet, so Abraham presents, well, God, perhaps you're going to have this promise come through my servant. And God says, no, it's going to be through your own seed, Abraham. And you look at verse 6, and you read these words that are quoted even in the book of Romans, and he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. Abraham, I'm going to give you a son. It's going to be through your seed. This steward is not his seed. It's not his son. Well, from chapter 12 to the end of chapter 15, nothing happens. Abraham gets tired of waiting. God obviously wants us to do something. Now Genesis chapter 16, verses 1 through 6. Now, Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children. And she had an handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said unto Abram, Behold now, the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. And he went unto Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. And Sarai said unto Abram, My wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom. And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. But Abram said unto Sarai, Behold, thy maid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. Think of the phrase, I just can't wait. Oh, I just can't wait. And then, like children, I can't wait for Christmas, or I can't wait for my birthday. I just can't wait. That may be taken in two ways, either excited anticipation or impatience. And it's the impatience that I want us to look at tonight, that second definition, impatience. So as we're here in Genesis chapter 16, I want us to look, and if you would get the lights, please, as we do this, I want you to look at the imperiling impact of impatience, because waiting today is a rare virtue in our instant culture. I want it right now. I remember when the boys were young, they wanted a BB gun. Well, you'll shoot your eye out, you know. We said that when they were really young, but when they were eight, when they're old, 8 years old, they were able to get a BB gun. Going camping, growing up. You know, when you're young, you want to grow up. Today, Barak said, when we talked to him on the phone, man, I can't believe I'm 21. My life is a quarter over already. How many of you would like to be 21 again? Yeah. Can't believe it. How fast time goes, and yet when you're young, you want to get there. We wait to get out of debt. It's hard to wait to get married, to get over a sickness, for relief from trying circumstances, waiting for the open door for the job, waiting for this church building. How long did we wait? 10 years. Waiting is hard to do. I want it now. I want to know now. That mentality has infected Christianity, yet it has no place in Christianity. Impatience is not a fruit of the Spirit. But you know what is? Long suffering. It means to suffer long, to be in trying circumstances that are difficult to remain under and yet to remain there, to wait on the Lord. Folks, I want you to see that being impatient can have devastating results. Devastating results. A lot of our problems today stem from being impatient in the past. I want you to understand the imperiling impact of impatience. Abraham's and Sarah's impatience with God had an imperiling impact on, number one, their actions. We've already read these verses, but I want you to see in these verses, it says that Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children. And so they began to scheme in verse 2. It may be that I may obtain children by her. Isn't it interesting how Christians can concoct all kinds of schemes and make up all kinds of excuses when God doesn't perform like we want him to? And in the time that we want him to? Well, maybe we're not supposed to be here. And we begin thinking. You know, when we have to wait, we confuse inaction on God's part as being a green light for us to move. Even as Abraham and Sarah. Because God wasn't acting, because it wasn't taking place, well, maybe this is the green. Maybe we're supposed to do something. But folks, inaction on God's part is often a red light for you to sit still and simply wait in that particular matter. And what is it we don't like to do? We don't want to wait, because waiting is hard. I dislike waiting for a red light or at a red light. I hate it when I'm at a red light and there's no traffic coming from the sides and you sit there and you sit there. How many times have you looked both ways, looked in the rearview mirror, looked way ahead, saw there was no law enforcement around, and you crept through the red light because you're impatient? I don't like red lights, but if you don't wait, what happens? Yeah, the cop is always there. There's always an impact because of it. And the impact may not be that you're in a car wreck. The impact may be that your little child sitting in the back seat sees you do it, and 18 years from then, he remembers that Daddy did that, and I can do it too, and then there's a tragedy. Psalm 62, verse 1 and 5 and 6, truly my soul waiteth upon God. From him cometh my salvation. My soul, wait thou only upon God, for my expectation is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be moved. I'll wait. I'll do that which is difficult. And of course, you know the verse that says, they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. But impatience with God has an imperiling impact on our actions. Secondly, on our relationships. I want you to see verse 5 again. Sarah said unto Abram, my wrong be upon thee. All of a sudden, Sarai, who concocted the scheme in the first place, is now having problems in her marriage. Now she's blaming him. The relationship between Abram and Sarai is affected. In this case, it affects the relationship with the other person who schemed with him. Here's an interesting principle. If you can't wait upon God, you can't wait on each other. Your relationship with God many times shows your relationship with your spouse. And if there's difficulty there, you ought to look at the vertical relationship. Your horizontal relationships, better look at your vertical relationship and what's happening there. It's interesting how a couple who won't wait for marriage to have intimacy often later have troubles. Many financial difficulties in marriages are due to one or both not being able to wait for things. And then their relationship is strained. David's relationship to the subjects in his kingdom was pretty good because he waited, and twice when he had the opportunity to kill Saul, he didn't do it. I think of the verse in Proverbs, "Say not thou, I will recompense evil, but wait on the Lord, and he shall save thee." Impatience with God has an imperiling impact on Abraham's and Sarah's actions, upon their relationships, and thirdly, upon their descendants. Look at verses 11 and 12 of chapter 16. "And the angel of the Lord said unto her, Behold, thou art with child, and shall bear a son, and shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. And he will be a wild man, his hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him, and he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren." Here is one of the more imperiling impacts, an impact that we are still experiencing today, 4,000 years later. It does have an impact upon the descendants. Eventually, Abraham and Sarah receive the blessing of what was promised. They have a son by Sarah, Isaac by name. He is born in chapter 21. But now things are complicated. Why? Because the product of their impatience is Ishmael, who's the progenitor of the Arabs, or at least some of them, the traditional enemies of the Jewish people. That has affected the descendants even today in the Middle East. From the time or from the line of Ishmael also came Muhammad, the founder of Islam, whose followers are perhaps the hardest to reach with the gospel of Jesus Christ. This one act of impatience here in Genesis chapter 16 has imperially impacted the world over. Here it is, 4,000 years later. Folks, don't think that your impatience does not impact your family, that it does not impact your children. It does. And it's not that, man, I did something in the past and now it can't be helped. But sometimes the consequences are there even when we've been forgiven. Impatience with God has an imperiling impact on their actions, on their relationships, on their descendants, and on their faith. Look at verse 17 of chapter 17. "Then Abraham fell upon his face and laughed and said in his heart, Shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old, and shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear?" Here God has told him, listen, it's not going to be Ishmael. Sarah is going to have a child. I've told you, you're going to have a child by Sarah. Abraham laughs. This imperilously impacted Abraham's faith for a moment, such that he laughed. Go with me to Psalm chapter 78. Notice the children of Israel in the desert, when this is being written, they're in the wilderness, and what is written of them? Psalm 78, verses 19 and 20. "Yea, they spake against God. They said, Can God furnish a table in the wilderness? Behold, he smote the rock that the waters gushed out and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people?" Then look at verse 22. "Because they believed not in God and trusted not in his salvation." They were getting mouthy with God. How often did they do this? Go to verses 40 and 41. "How oft did they provoke him in the wilderness and grieve him in the desert? Yea, they turned back and tempted God and limited the Holy One of Israel." They were not willing to wait. And yet you get to Psalm 130 and verse 5, and the psalmist says this, "I wait for the Lord. My soul doth wait, and in his word do I hope." You know, even the animal kingdom practices waiting on the Lord. And it's a rebuke to us. I think of what Psalm 104 mentions. Every beast of the field, the wild asses, the fowls of the heaven, the wild goats, the conies. And then Psalm 104, 21, the young lions roar after their prey and seek their meat from God. And then you get to verse 27 and it says, these wait all upon thee, that thou mayest give them their meat in due season. They wait. And it's a rebuke to us. Waiting and trusting are directly related. Waiting and faith are directly related. Animals, folks, wait on the Lord. Why can't we, His rational creatures, wait on the Lord? You are no doubt familiar with this passage, Psalm 37, 7 and 9, rest in the Lord. You know, isn't it nice to rest? Just rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in his way, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil, for evildoers shall be cut off, but those that wait upon the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. Isn't it interesting how that waiting on the Lord is also equated with rest in the Lord, just rest. But waiting is so hard for us. Impatience with God for Abraham and Sarah had an imperiling impact on their actions, on their relationship with each other, on their descendants, on their faith. It also impacted their theology. Theology is the study of God. It's my perception of God. It's what I think of God. This happens when our faith is impacted. Our theology follows. It imperilously impacted Abraham's theology for a moment, such that he was willing to compromise. Too often, we act like we can handle the situation far better than God can. Well, God's way won't work. So we move him out of the driver's seat and put ourselves there and say, apparently I've got to do something. What's that saying about God when you do that? I notice at least three things. We're saying that God is not omniscient. And we have to throw out Isaiah 55 verse 9, which says, God's ways are higher than my ways, and God's thoughts are higher than my thoughts. Somebody once said that we have the dashboard view of what's taking place. All I can see is that car in front of me. It's like, why don't these people get out of the way? I'm in this traffic jam. But we need to have that helicopter point of view, where from up there, what is clogging everything up can be seen far ahead. And we need to, by faith, adopt God's helicopter view. More than a helicopter, He sees not just from the helicopter, He sees from outer space. He not only sees our immediate situation, He sees how it could affect things all over the world. And we need to adopt God's perspective. But I can't see what God sees. That's why we walk by faith and not by sight. That God knows what He is doing. He is omniscient. That is, He is all-knowing. That's what omniscience means. But our theology is affected when we don't wait upon the Lord. We begin to think that God doesn't know what's going on here. We also think that God is not omnipotent, that is, all-powerful. And you have to throw out Genesis 18, 14. Are you still in Genesis 17? Go to chapter 18. Look at verse 14. Is anything too hard for the Lord? Is there anything that God can't do that's too hard for Him? Or think of Jeremiah 32, verse 27. Behold, I am the Lord, the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? When we're not willing to wait upon God, it affects our theology in the area of God's omnipotence, that God perhaps doesn't have the power to do this. And I need to help God out a little bit. Oh, how interesting is that? That we have to help out God. But then here's something else. We begin to doubt God's truth, God's promises. I wonder if God is really, I wonder if this is really true. We begin to doubt his word. I mean, think about it, folks. Think about our wait for his second coming. We read this morning in Revelation chapter 21 and in chapter 22 that he's going to come shortly. Where is he? And when we get tired of waiting, it begins to affect our theology to the point where we think, well, we've got to come up with some other kind of a system theologically because it doesn't accommodate, the Bible doesn't accommodate our situation and our circumstances. Apparently, we've misunderstood what God was going to do, or God is not telling us the truth. But let me just read you some verses from the Bible that talk about the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. And the Lord direct your hearts into the patient waiting for Christ. That's 2 Thessalonians 3:5. The Lord direct your hearts into the patient waiting for Christ. Or this passage. Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience for it until he receive the early and latter rain. Be ye also patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. James 5, 7, and 8. Here's what we have need of. It's patience, waiting on the Lord. I tell you, it is hard to wait for growth in a church. And some aren't willing to wait for growth. They want to grow right now. And whatever it takes to grow right now, let's do it. Pastor, you can't grow if you keep preaching doctrine. You can't grow if you're going to preach on sin. And we get impatient. So we begin to compromise doctrine, theology, in order to accommodate what people want. If we preach what God really is, people can't handle it. People feel guilty. They'll go somewhere else where they feel comfortable. And you can see how our impatience begins to affect our theology. I've known some people who I thought they were straight doctrinally. Then their circumstances were a little bit difficult, and they began to think differently about God because of their circumstances. And now their theology is not according to the Bible, their theology is according to their circumstances. Abraham's theology was being affected. When his faith was impacted, his theology followed. Impatience with God had an imperiling impact on Abraham's and Sarah's actions, on their relationships, on their descendants, on their faith, and on their theology. But let's acknowledge a few things here. Number one, waiting is not easy. The psalmist says this in 69:3, I am weary of my crying, my throat is dried, mine eyes fail while I wait for God. I get so tired of waiting. The more we have to wait, though, the stronger we become. Psalm 27:14, wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Did you notice that the promise there isn't that you wait on the Lord and it'll happen? It says, wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he will strengthen thine heart. You see, that's what we need, is for our heart to be strong in the wait. We don't necessarily need what we want to happen right now. We need the strengthened heart. You know the passage that says, tribulation or trials worketh patience. And that's what we, Lord, give me patience and give it to me right now, please. Because it is so hard. But then there's a promise for those who wait. The Lord is good unto them that wait for him, to the soul that seeketh him. It is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. What a negative, far-reaching, perilous impact our impatience has. What a positive, powerful, God-honoring testimony waiting has. All of us have had a problem with waiting sometime in the past. All of us have gotten tired, and we did something we shouldn't have done. All of us have, in some area. And you look back and you regret it. Folks, from this point on, unless you have clear direction to do something from God, wait on the Lord. I wonder if you might be at an important intersection tonight, waiting on a red light. Keep waiting until God makes that light turn green. And then go. Wait on the Lord.